Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Transportation and Transit Policy Subcommittee. And we have several bills today. All will be laid over for possible inclusion in a transportation policy omnibus bill. We actually have a transportation policy omnibus bill. And I know that Representative Holberg has to be somewhere fairly quickly after the hearing, so we'd like to have her go first with House File 1376. We do not have a quorum as of yet, so if we need to move your bill, we'll move it as soon as we have the quorum. And then we'll also move the minutes as well at that time. So welcome to the committee as a member of the committee, Representative Holberg. And you can move your bill formally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill actually has to go to local government. So I don't know how that
Fits
into your omnibus bill.
Let's change the motion
plan.
Let's do this, I will still call you Madam Chair. Let's do this, Representative Holberg. Let's move this up to the full committee, get that done, and then move it from there to local government.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I will move that.
All right. Thank you. House File 1376 is trying to address the problem, and I have a constituent here to testify by the name of Jim Blanchard, and I have had some discussions with the Township Association representatives, and they're not totally enamored with my bill. They recognize the problem, may have some ideas on different solutions, and I just wanted to say that up front. I think we're going to kumbaya today and hopefully with the committee's blessing move the bill forward and continue to talk about options for dealing with the issue. What happened here is that this situation and that my constituent Jim Blanchard that now has property that's been held in his family for decades that he no longer has access to as a result of a township action to extinguish their interest in an abandoned road. And I have placed in your packet the handout of a number of other statutes that kind of relate to this issue, one being on the front page of the green sheet that talks about that a local road can't be vacated if it's the only means of access to a property. And then also the process whereby you would go through a vacation of a established road and all the notices and appeal processes that would entail from that action. As you will see in the language of the bill, which addresses the section of law that we're trying to amend today, this is the section of law that the township views in order to extinguish their interest in what they view to be an abandoned road. You'll find that current law, there is no notice to the property owners, while there is a high standard in order to do this. And with that, I'd like Mr. Blanchard to tell his story, and then I'll sum up. And I know the townships want to testify as well.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Blanchard.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity of addressing. The property in question was purchased by my grandfather in 1930. It was then passed to my mother and then to me. It's about 6 miles east of Moose Lake. And when my grandfather bought it, it was a working farm. It had a four-bedroom house, barn, the outbuildings that were there. Our family used it primarily as a recreational area and place to pick blueberries. I actually slept in the house when I was a kid and drove into the property with a regular car. I've used it for hunting purposes, I suppose, from the 70s on to the present time. And in, I believe it was 2003, I went to go to the property as I normally do, and there was a barricade across the road. I stopped at the barricade, and the landowner that's there came out and told me that it was no longer a road. It had been closed, and there was no access. How do you do that? Well, I ended up contacting the township and they told me that the road had been abandoned and sent me a notice of that. And so I spent the last couple of years trying to gather information as to how this happened and why I had no say in it. I'm the third 40 in from a county road. There is no other way to the property. And I've gone to the town board meetings, I believe four. They've expressed some sympathy with my position, but no solutions to the problem. In order to go hunting there now, for the last couple of years, I've had to walk in 2.5 miles from the nearest county road to the west. And fortunately or unfortunately, I didn't get a deer. I mean, it'd be kind of hard to drag it out to 2.5 miles, but and I would like to pass the property on to the next generation, but at this point I can't get to it. It's pretty hard to use. Part of my looking into this whole thing in the reason for abandoning the road, they said the road never existed. And I went to the county seat and I was talking to the county auditor, and he said, "Oh, no." He said, "We've got the surveyor order to establish the road." He said, "That's normally kept in the auditor's office. The law was changed, I think he told me, in 1974. So the orders prior to that time were supposed to be in the auditor's office, and the surveyor's order to establish the road. And that was the document that was used to create the road. Specifically states that that's where it's supposed to go." And I found it. And I thought it was interesting that in the documents that the township had, they referred to that order, but it's one of the reasons for abandoning the road. They said it didn't exist. Seems strange that they would use it and yet say it wasn't there. One of the other requirements for things is that the road hadn't been maintained. Well, during that time, some of the culverts have rusted out and have been replaced. I don't know who did the work, but there has been road done. There was a bridge that's actually on my property that goes over the tributary or the startup of the Nemadji River. And I was very small. It was an actual wood frame bridge to drive over. That collapsed. Somebody put in a couple of culverts. They washed out. And in 1980, the local snowmobile club put in a steel frame bridge, wood deck, that was paid for by the state through the grant and aid program. And that was put in 1980, which it falls within the 25-year no maintenance on the road. I think that kind of covers the the bridge that was put in is 60 feet long, 16 feet wide, and is rated to carry the snow grooming machine, which I'm told weighs 10,000 pounds. So it's not a small structure. I don't know if you drive across it. It's made for a tracked vehicle to go across it. It's very substantial. And I guess that's about it. I'd like to be able to get to my land. And I don't really want to walk in 2.5 miles And if I were to ever want to harvest the timber off it, I would have no way of doing that. It's listed as a timber property.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Blanchard. Do any committee members have any questions?
Mr. Chair, maybe I can fill in some of the pieces of how we got to this point and some of the background. We did do the research. Here's the final road order of the town board that was filed in 1920 in Carlton County and filed with the county auditor, which was the way to do town roads in those days. In the early 70s, the legislature changed the standard for filing road orders and had that they be recorded with the county recorder. So this was a lawful road order at the time the road was established. The legislative change to put it to the recorder happened in the early 70s. The language that you see before you in House File 1376 was language that was put into effect in the early 90s. As you can see, the purpose of this is to extinguish an interest in an abandoned road. And the standards actually are quite high when you look at it, in that the interest is found to be, or the extinguishment is found to be in the public interest. There's not a fee interest. It was established more than 25 years ago and not recorded or filed with the county recorder. Well, so it leaves all of these roads pre-72 that were filed with county auditors subject to this action, and that no road improvement has been constructed on a right-of-way affected by the interest within the last 25 years, and, of course, the maintenance. Now, we weren't able to find any written record of township or county investment in road maintenance. However, there were changes to the road and the culverts were installed. We were able to find, of course, record of the state grant and aid investment in putting in the bridge. And over all of these years, through the 70s, 80s, 90s, a number of years, that road right-of-way was used for snowmobile trail purposes, and only until after this township action have the local officials contacted Mr. Blanchard in order to obtain an easement to go over his property with the snowmobile trail. Prior to the town board's action, no contact was ever made with Mr. Blanchard to ask for permission to put in the bridge or any of the other things were done. In going through the county records in the 90s, an intern took an inventory of the roads in Carlton County, and Birch Road is listed in the county's inventory of roads. And in fact, you might ask, why did this happen in the first place? Well, the reason this happened in the first place, and by the way, it was done at a special meeting of the town board held in somebody's living room, and the meeting was noticed. You know, there was the notice of the meeting published in the little local paper, but no contact was made with Mr. Blanchard to let him know that this was even being contemplated. And why did this happen? Well, the property owner that abutted the county road and the township road wanted to construct the building, and the place in which he wanted to construct the building would have required a variance for a setback from the town road, according to the documents from the county. So at that time, the county considered Birch Road a road. And so the easy way to resolve this, and in following some of the documentation, which of course is public, with the township records and the county records, is an attorney made the recommendation that they could extinguish their interest in the township road. That would then negate the need for a setback variance for the individual that abutted the county road, thereby taking away the problem, if you will, the setback variance, but not at all responsive or even concerned about the fact that they were leaving a number of parcels completely and totally landlocked. The value of this property is about $5,000. Initial estimates to establish a cartway in this area are in the $7,000 to $8,000 range, in the amount of surveying and the issues that would have to be done in order to access this. And so we're here today. We worked with the township officials over the last couple of years, hoping to come to some kind of resolution short of coming to the legislature. But I don't believe, and in talking to Representative Leader and in fact John Williams, who was here when we started looking into this, nobody believes that it was the intent of the legislature to put forth a process where you would landlock a property without any notice to a landowner on an access that's been being used for all these years, albeit Mr. Blanchard admits that he would only come up a couple times a year, whether it be to hunt or just check on the property. It wasn't an issue whereby he was using it on a regular basis. And for us metro people, it's not a road like we would consider a road, but rather a meandering path that's very limited in width, that most likely could only be accessed by a four-wheel drive and or an ATV in certain times of the year. Mr. Blanchard is not here today to ask for an improvement to that access. He doesn't want any more than what exists. What he basically wants is access to his property without having to incur thousands of dollars of cost in order to get to this property that has been in his family for decades.
Thank you very much, Representative Holberg. Any questions of Mr. Blanchard? We're going to have Mr. Sulem as well from the Township Association, but I just wanted to see if anyone had any immediate questions. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chairman.
I was calling Representative Hilstrom.
Representative Holberg, who owns the adjacent property that now must own the road under this abandonment?
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, there's about, I believe 8 property owners affected. He's the 4th parcel in on, is it the south side of the old road? Mm-hmm. So, if you can imagine, there's a county road, and then there's four.
It's a north-south road on 3rd 40 in on the west side.
Well,
and if we might, in talking to the township officials, it appears that there are family relationships between the other property owners, and they are not concerned with trespassing or access. But when Mr. Blanchard went up there and tried to access his property, he encountered a barrier and a notice that there was no road any longer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess
Representative Earhart,
whoever put the barrier up must take the owner out. What about adverse possession? If he's been using that all these years, there used to be something where you continuously used the property, you gained access, or could, and I'm not a lawyer, but I remember that happening.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, that I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not going to go there to speculate, but Mr. Blanchard believes that he had a road. He had access to his property. And to have to fight in court in order to retain that access. And if you look at the green handout, if in fact there is a road there, there is a very, very prescriptive process for extinguishing interest in a town road, and it is the responsibility of the township to establish the cartway. There's a notice required to the property owners affected. There's an appeals process. So it's pretty clear that the legislature took very seriously the process whereby we were going to take away a road, and we allowed for abutting property owners to have a lot of say and impact in the process. In addition, on the front page of the handout, we talk about that when a county road or town road is the only means of access to any property or properties containing an area combined of more than 5 acres, the road shall not be vacated without the consent of the property owner unless another means of access are provided.
Any follow-up, Representative Earhart?
Well, Mr. Sherman, what are we looking at here? You declare that, and I didn't get your name because I came in late, is
Mr. Blanchard.
Mr. Blanchard? Would be here, would have access and no more? Is that what we're trying to establish?
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, what this bill would do, as you see on Section 2 of the bill on page 2, that a road extinguished under this section of law in which the interest was filed with the county auditor would be null and void. And so, in other words, we would recognize the validity of the final road order that was filed in the 20s. Then, if the township wanted to, then they could embark on the process for establishing a cartway in which there'd be notice and that there be a process to go about doing that.
Other questions of Mr. Blanchard, Representative Holberg at this time? Okay, with that, I would like to call up Mr. Sulem from the Township Association. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sulem. Nice to see you on an issue other than annexation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kent Sulem, General Counsel with the Minnesota Association of Townships, and it's nice to be here on something other than annexation. As you can imagine, there are two sides to every story, and while we certainly are sympathetic to Mr. Blanchard's situation, from the township perspective, there's a little bit more involved. The process that has been described under Minnesota Statute 160.06 is primarily used in a situation where the township has absolutely no ability to prove that the road was ever a township road. And I know you're hearing reference to this road order from 1920. The problem we have at the township level is there is sufficient case law, many court cases that have come out saying most of these road orders are meaningless if there's no other documentation to prove that the township actually perfected its interest in this alleged road. And the situation at hand, and all I can relay to you is the information I received from the town attorney. This is not my first-hand information, but the info provided by the town attorney. In the situation at hand, the township was made aware that one of the other landowners, Representative Holberg mentioned, applied for a building permit. There had to be clarified, was he or was he not crying us back from this road that was there? The township was unaware that there was any claim to this being a town road, did research, and as I'm told, looked through 38 years of records, could find absolutely no acknowledgement that they had ever spent one dime on the road, did any improvement to the road. They contacted the county recorder, was informed that there was no road record. They then worked with their town attorney, who, looking at the statutes, looking at the case law, said, yes, even if there is this road order from 1920, the courts won't let us recognize that road order. It's not valid under the case law. You have no other documentation to establish that this was ever a town road. Township has never treated it as a town road in any recent memory. You'll never be able to sustain as a town road. So they passed a resolution under the 160.06 saying, we don't know if it ever was a road, we don't believe it's a road, but we are disclaiming any claim to this road because we can't prove it's a road, which abandons it under 160.06. So they're kind of in this catch-22. They have a landowner who is landlocked if they don't recognize it as a road, but they try to claim it as a road, they're sued by the fellow who needs the building permit, and they have no ability under either existing statute or case law to prove it's a road. It's the proverbial catch-22. Unfortunately, from a legal perspective, as far as which lawsuit is most winnable, it's saying there's no road because that's what the history is there for. As far as trying to retroactively have the legislature recognize it as a road, although I understand that Mr. Blanchard has no desire to want the road upgraded or developed, and I understand that. The problem is once it is a town road, we are obligated to maintain it. If somebody else comes along and says, hey, this is not properly maintained, if somebody else at a bus that strip says, well, it's now impassable, we would be forced to upgrade a road, which actually under existing law, because it's been at least 25 years, and I said the records, the township research said more than 38 years, we are actually prohibited by statute from spending one dime on that road. So even though the current owner has no interest, any other abutting owner could cause problems, a subsequent owner could cause problems for the township. And the bigger issue is, quite frankly, any of those other landowners that abut this entity, whatever you wish to call it, could very well sue for property takings. Because the township, we ran into this in the 1980s when the legislature tried to help townships by saying you can record your roads, we'll make the recording process easier so you can and all these challenges to what is a road, not a road. Here's a recording process. The townships follow that process and get immediately sued for an unconstitutional taking of the property. So what we're stuck with is trying to work with Brooklyn and Holberg to find a solution that will be upheld by the courts, won't cost the taxpayers more money in litigation, takings claims, upgrading the road. That's part of the reason that the town board has not been able to help in this situation at the time is we're willing to keep trying, but I can't promise you that there's a workable solution that works for the taxpayers at the township level.
Well, I appreciate that.
And Mr. Chair, if I can add,
Representative
Holt, as government entities, we can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
We can't say, well, the township didn't do anything here, so it's not a road. Meanwhile, for years and years, the DNR considered it a road, allowed it up for use for the public for a snowmobile trail, made improvements with no consideration if it wasn't a road for my constituents' property use, and in fact listed as a road, and then all of a sudden when we run into a problem, we're going to say, well, no, it's not a road, and we'll start asking Mr. Blanchard if we can cross his property because it's no longer a road.
Good point. I'm going to call on Representative Nelson, and then I'm going to ask if there's any further testimony from the public. Representative Medore. And then I will ask if there's any additional testimony from the public, and then we have kind of a proposed solution to some of the differences here that we'll move ahead with. So, Representative Nelson.
I guess I'm a little confused, and I got a couple of questions. One is, does this bill turn back the clock? I mean, I'm not an attorney, but I've heard about unwinding or whatever, turning things back. Does this make Mr. Blanchard whole, or does this fix the problem for him and open the Pandora's box and cause all sorts of other problems? And the other question I have is, where I own property up north and where I hunt, there's signs up a call about minimum maintenance roads that warn that the road isn't maintained, but they're still listed as minimum maintenance roads. Could this have been considered that in the past? I guess, and I don't know enough about how you establish those, but to me, that's what it sounds like. What it was before, barely a road that you could drive on. It was limited times there; you couldn't get through it. But the city didn't maintain it. The county doesn't maintain it. It's posted that way, so you know going in that's what's there.
Representative Nelson, are you addressing your question to Mr. Sewell?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Sewell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, yes, there is an entity called a minimum maintenance road. However, and under the current description, the current circumstance, it sounds very likely that this road, if it were to be established as a road, could qualify for minimum maintenance standards. To be minimum maintenance, it must receive just occasional sporadic use. Which is a pretty loose term.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with minimum maintenance standard is that as soon as anybody is there on a year-round basis, whether it's our current individual who's asking for this or any of the other, I believe you mentioned that there were eight other potential landowners that say, we're here year-round, we want to start using this on more than just an occasional sporadic basis, the township would then be required at their expense to bring it up to full grade. So it may be a short-term solution with long-term risk.
Okay. Thank you. A follow-up, or otherwise I'll call on Representative Medore. Okay. Representative Medore for the last question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Holberg, is there a way that we can look at grandfathering perhaps some of this, or to allow a statement for the landowner to say, for as long as I own this property, I'm not going to transfer it to another property owner, can we just grandfather in my acceptance of a minimal maintenance road or give them, because to be honest, the idea that we're landlocking somebody, now we've even taken away his potential to be able to sell the property if he so chooses, right? Because there's no way to get to the property from the main road. So I don't feel that that's, in looking at the way the land was platted, somebody in the county office should have been able to tell, gee, we've got a five-parcel block of land here that the landowner is not going to be able to get to, and maybe we should investigate a little bit more who owns that. And so I guess I'd like to try to solve this person's problem, but is there a way that we can do that to grandfather in his acceptance so the county isn't responsible today to make those upgrades for as long as he owns the land, if he wanted to.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Midori, you were a little late coming in.
Yes,
what I said up front is that the townships aren't in support of this.
Right.
They recognize that they're a problem. We're doing the kumbaya thing, both stating our concerns here in front of this committee. It has to go to the full transportation committee and also to local government. Mr. Sulem has committed to try and work something out that will address this issue. I don't believe it was the intent of the legislature to cause a problem like this, and there may be an opportunity to find a solution without a lot of negative ramifications. And certainly I'm committed to doing that. Mr. Sulem is as well. And this has to see two more committees, so we've got two behind.
So, okay. Thank you. So, members, what we're going to do here, and I've worked over the years closely with both Representative Berg and Mr. Sulem on various issues. They're honorable folks. I trust that they're going to meet together and hopefully resolve some of these differences. But in the meantime, we are going to move this bill forward. I will renew Representative Holbrook's motion to pass House File 1376 and move it to the full Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee with a further recommendation after that to move to local government. So that's the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. The motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. Thank you, Mr. Sulem. Thank you, Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We will... again, try to hear this, conscious of our bill deadlines, hear it as soon as we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Morgan, are you ready to go? Okay. So, our next bill is House File 679. Representative Morgan, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Mr. Chair, I'm here today to...
Mr. Morgan, I was...
Yes.
Representative Morgan, I realize that you're on the full committee.
Yeah, I'm not on this committee.
So I will move House File 679 and recommend it to pass and then be re-referred to the full transportation policy omnibus bill, which we will deal with in the broader... Okay.
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair and members, today I'm here to talk about House File 679. I have to admit, when I decided to run for office, the idea of concrete pumps never entered my radar screen. Representative constituent interests. Members of the ready-mix aggregate and ready-mix association brought this to my attention, and I thought it made a lot of sense. And Fred Corrigan of the aggregate and ready-mix association of Minnesota is here to talk about exactly what House File 679 will do, and then I'll reserve some time at the end for some summary comments if it pleases the chair.
Thank you. Sounds like a good process. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Corrigan.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Again, for the record, my name is Fred Corrigan. I'm executive director of the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association of Minnesota. I also have Dan Rentz with me from ABR, Inc., who will pick up some of the technical issues that Representative Morgan and I may not know the fine details of. This is a bill, Representatives, which really just clarifies current practice. Special mobile equipment in statute is defined vehicles that are used to move equipment from job site to job site. They don't carry a load. They're not carrying anything other than the equipment that is required to do the work once it gets to the site. The State Patrol and the Department of Public Safety had reviewed this legislation, had up till now treated these trucks as being registration exempt in the same manner that you would treat a well drilling truck or other equipment. And in the statute there is language that says but not limited to, and that's how the Department of Public Safety has been treating these trucks up till now. They contacted us late last year and said that they would like us to come to the legislature, get clarification on these trucks specifically. Otherwise, they would start to collect registration on January 1st, 2008. Let me just tell you a little bit about the trucks. There's a handout going around with just a one-page, some items, and there also is some pictures of the trucks going around for you. This model is also a model of the trucks, although it is not exactly what would be used in Minnesota. The truck in Minnesota would have two more axles because of our five-ton roads. And I must tell the committee that as opposed to Wisconsin, for instance, this truck, which is an 80,000-pound legal truck, in Minnesota, costs about $40,000 to $50,000 more than it would across the border in Wisconsin because of the need to add two more axles to move across some of our five-ton roads. So we already have a significant investment in these trucks over and above what some of our competitors in other states would make. As I mentioned, these are self-contained units for moving concrete pumps only. They move from job to job, and they essentially take the concrete from the back of a ready-mix truck and pour it into forms, mostly for basements, which is now the most common way across the state to build basements. We still build some block basements, but in the metropolitan area, for instance, it's about 90% poured basements today. They're built especially, as I mentioned, for Minnesota roads. These vehicles pay all of the other taxes that any vehicle in Minnesota pays. They pay on-road fuel taxes for the portion of the trip or fuel that's used on the road. They pay sales tax when they're purchased. They are annually inspected for DOT inspections. In terms of identification, they have a vehicle identification number, so the State Patrol knows or is able to find out the history of the truck. They have a DOT number for the annual inspection. So there is, and they have a DOT number on the side of the truck as well. Again, there's no saleable products carried on the pump trucks, and I think that's the key criteria that the legislature intended in passing the special mobile equipment. If these trucks are not designed to carry goods, rather are only designed to carry equipment to and from construction sites, I think that's the intent of the bill. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop for questions.
Questions, members, for Mr. Corrigan? Okay. Seeing none, did you want any further testimony, or did you want to make some?
No, actually, Mr. Corrigan did a great job. I would appreciate the committee's support in moving this bill through to help clarify this interpretation of the law.
Okay, and just for the members that came late, just we didn't do this with Representative Holberg's bill, but from here on out, we are going to be doing a, unless a bill needs to be moved to another committee, if it's a purely transportation matter, as this is and the rest of the bills on our agenda today, we are going to be having a transportation policy omnibus bill. And the process for that is that we will mark it up in the subcommittee, and then it'll be, it will have to be voted on and approved by the full committee before it goes to the floor. So the motion, just so there's no confusion, for this bill and, of course, the rest of them, I will renew my motion to recommend that House File 679 be held over for possible inclusion in a transportation policy omnibus bill. Representative Aaron.
Mr. Chairman, how do these get to site? They're not hauled there. They drive on the roads to get there? Okay.
Yeah, so we really... don't have to vote. It'll just be laid over for possible inclusion. So with that, thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have a trio of bills from Representative Morrow. And the first one is, I believe, House File 825. Is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll also move that House File 825 be held over for possible inclusion in the transportation policy omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have one testifier joining me today. And while he's joining us, we've had a chance to talk briefly just now with MnDOT. And MnDOT has asked that the following amendment be included in the bill, to which I have no objection. It would be at 1.10. And after the first "the," to insert the words "towing truck or." So it would read, "rating of the towing truck or pickup truck."
Okay, I think what we'll do is vote to incorporate that. Does the council have maybe want to repeat the...
The oral amendment is on page 1, line 10, after the first "the," insert "towing or."
Could I have that right? Towing truck.
Towing truck or.
Or.
Okay. Everyone clear on that? All in favor of the author's oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll turn to my testifier to talk about the substance of the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Al Brody. I am retired. I live in Faribault. My wife and I are snowbirds. Madam Snowbird decided this year it was time to spend a little more of the winter with kids and grandkids, and we snuck home between the blizzards. Thank you. That's the reason after 13 years, the 1994 session, I am again before a committee speaking on tourism issues. And House File 825 is a tourism issue. We are snowbirds. We are RVers. I'm not a fifth-wheeler, by the way, but we are RVers. Nationally, one out of 12 families owns an RV. They say there's a million full-timers out there. That's their home. We've had the opportunity to staff Explore Minnesota booth at a couple of RV shows. We hope to be in Pomona, California, February of next year for the Family Motor Coach show. They're one of their spring national. They're coming to St. Paul in 2008, July, the fairgrounds. You're talking 5,000 rigs, 2,000 hotel rooms, 200 rental cars. It's big business. It is indeed big business. Most of those members that will come in are retired, and they'll travel. We probably figure they'll spend 2 to 4 weeks traveling Minnesota before and after the rally. It's big business. It's big business for outstate Minnesota. What do they call it now? Greater Minnesota. It's Greater Minnesota now. So it's an opportunity to be of some help. In the course of our travels and working the shows, we have the opportunity to discover what RVers think of Minnesota. And yes, we had some problems. Most of them have been corrected. This bill will help significantly. The legislature and the DNR State Parks on January 1 of this year, I did away with the double charge of motorhomes with a towed vehicle. And that upset many, many people. Explore Minnesota is going to do more promotion aimed at RVers. MnDOT has just administratively adopted RV-friendly signing to go with their interstate logo signing. And speaking of MnDOT, with the amendment, they have no objection to this bill as long as we don't add to the total length. This bill, 825, will make a fifth-wheeler towing a boat happy and legal. I worked on this in 1993. If the original version was passed in 1993, yes, I go back that far. All the states around us had it. The Iowans were getting pretty doggone nasty, in fact, until we finally got it through in 1993. Since it has been amended a number of times, I have nothing to do with those amendments, the total length was increased to 70 feet. The length of the fifth wheel itself was only increased from 26 to 28 feet. Trucks have gotten bigger and better. I mean, we're looking at medium-duty haulers now. They're much better able to handle the longer fifth wheel. The new fifth wheels, the bigger ones, have double, triple axles, electric over hydraulic brakes, far better suspension systems. And if you remove the length requirement from the fifth wheel and do not increase the total length, which we don't intend to do, you're going to have a stronger, safer setup. As I said, you have a bigger and better dog with a smaller tail. Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity to explain the bill, the need for it to you, and I would urge your support, of course. And as a few of you, very few of you, know, I spent 25 years up here promoting tourism issues. This is a tourism issue. It will bring more RVers into Minnesota to further improve our economy. If anybody has any questions, I'll try and answer. A few familiar faces are on, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Any messages? Okay. Representative Lindor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to make this brief. In my previous life, I was on the Urban Affairs Committee for the City of Apple Valley. And one of our issues is parking these vehicles when they come to town. And the common complaint that I heard from a lot of the RV owners is that there's very few places for us to park these if we go to visit relatives. Not necessarily just for tourism when you're going to a park and you can park at those facilities, but when you're going to visit a relative in some of our smaller or some of our older cities that don't have the driveway length of more than 18 or 20 feet. I would just like to address that on behalf of Apple Valley and Burnsville and Rosemount, who are now struggling with this issue. Have you also been working to find places to park these vehicles so that the owners are not ticketed or they're not feeling pressure to move out from visiting family with the 48-hour rule that some communities have instituted? I'm just curious about that.
Representative Gora, I've had war RVers, and one of the first things we've asked our friends when they come, when they say come visit us, how long is your driveway?
Right.
This is not going to change the overall length. We know it's a problem. It's a national problem. There's just no question about it. This is not going to make any difference as far as the total length is concerned. It's just going to address the size of the fifth wheel itself, and you're seeing bigger ones of those was the reason we're trying to... it's a problem. There's nothing, and there's really no easy solution to it. This RV-friendly signing that I'm speaking of is a logo that will go on the current interstate logo. Our logo sign in interstate, which will indicate this business has sufficient space to turn around, sufficient, if it's a restaurant, a 65 or 70-foot stall to park in. So that's being taken care of through RV-friendly signing. As far as the neighborhoods go, you've got a problem and there's just no way around it. And I'm sorry. If I had an answer, I would really be famous or infamous.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, do we know if the State Patrol has any problem with the bill?
I have not. Representative Hausman, nothing's been communicated to me. But do we have... Okay. It would be great for you to... testify on the record, sir, on that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, our true concern with the recreational vehicle combination is that they ensure that we maintain the fifth wheel coupling requirement that is described in the definition of a three-vehicle combination in accordance with the present statute. And the reason for that is that we feel it's a much safer coupling system when you transfer part of the trailer weight to the actual power unit rather than relying on hooking that camper trailer onto a ball system. But if this legislation doesn't do that, then we don't have a concern with the way this is drafted.
Okay. That's very helpful. Thank you, sir. Any further questions from the committee? Okay, with that, I actually, on the motion, we're still, this is a new thing to have a subcommittee, and or at least in recent legislative history. And what we're going to need to do with this, and we'll have another motion on Representative Morgan's bill, that it will properly need to be moved to the full committee, where the full committee will approve the omnibus transportation policy bill. Again, it's the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee after all. So the motion now then would be to move House File 825 to the full Transportation Policy and Finance Committee for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill. Any questions of members? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion carries. And I guess procedurally we're going to need to just do that with Representative Morgan's bill as well. So, no, Representative Holbrook's is going to full committee anyway. So, members, again, the correct motion for House File 679 would be to be moved to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for possible inclusion in the Transportation Policy Omnibus Bill. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion is approved. So we are now in order and ready to go with Representative Morrow's second bill, House File 1095. And this one will be a little more lengthy, I believe, so just so members.
I think that's a fair guess, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. This is just a warm-up. This is
the hors d'oeuvre now.
I'll also move House File 1095. Be re-referred to the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee for possible inclusion in a transportation omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr.
Policy
Chair.
Policy omnibus bill.
On House Bill 1095, members, you'll notice that there are three sections to the bill. I understand there are folks who like to testify on all three sections and some folks who plan to testify on only one or more sections. So I just thought I would turn it over to our testifiers in the interest of time and let them talk to the item or items on which they're most concerned. So I'll turn first to Carol Lovro of the Association of Minnesota Counties.
Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Carol Lovro, and I'm the Transportation Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. We're here today to ask for your support on several issues that county engineers and AMC have been working on for several years. During the 2005 legislative session, there were numerous requests from different haulers for exemptions from seasonal load restrictions. And as a result, the legislature commissioned MnDOT to facilitate a study on weight limits and seasonal load restrictions. AMC and the county engineers participated in this study. Some of the more specific issues are more important to counties than others, but in general, we were supportive of the report. Since the report has not resulted in proposed legislation, counties decided to introduce a bill that deals with recommendations in the report that we feel are important to balancing changes benefiting private industry with the protection of local roads and bridge infrastructure. To try and bring uniformity and consistency, counties are proposing to declare all paved county roads and paved county state aid highways 10-ton unless posted. During the interim, technical information was presented that clearly proved that gravel roads need additional time to recover from winter thaw. So this bill proposes to extend the seasonal load restrictions on gravel roads to 2 weeks as recommended by the experts. In addition to accommodate haulers, the bill is proposing to repeal the statute that limited haulers to 73,280 pounds on 9-ton roads and increase the tonnage to the federal standard for interstate highways, which is 80,000 pounds. In exchange, we are requesting that the law that was passed in 2005 that moved from the current federal 1-mile access for gas, food, lodging, and etc. on a 10-ton axle load or 80,000 pounds to a 3-mile access be repealed and that Minnesota revert back to the 1-mile federal standard. The reason for this is that the new law is vague and often misinterpreted. Many counties have so many 10-ton routes that if the 3-mile limit is kept in place, it would blanket all the road mileage in the county, including city streets. Many of these roads are not 10-ton and cannot accommodate the 80,000 pounds. This request is to help us preserve our local infrastructure. I have with me today Marcus Hall, the county engineer from St. Louis County, who is their legislative co-chair and also participated in this seasonal load limit and weight limit study. And so I'll turn it over to him, and then we have Jerry Deeb with MnDOT that will follow up with some testimony on the gravel road issue.
Great. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, Marcus Hall, St. Louis County Public Works / County Engineer. Also serve as the legislative co-chair for the Minnesota County Association Engineers. As Carol mentioned, she laid out the subject very well. I'm just going to take a little bit of time and talk about the first two sections a little bit more in depth. The first section dealing with creating a 10-ton system basically for the county paved system. One of the great concerns that were voiced during the discussions on the Truck Size and Weight Committee was the inconsistency in the tonnage load limits on highways within the state of Minnesota. Currently, the vast majority of the state highway are 10-ton system. The vast majority, for good reason, on the county system are 9-ton or less. But for economic reasons, a hauler could be driving several hundred miles on a state highway and all of a sudden turn off on a county road, go a little ways, and the illegal, because he was hauling 10 tons for most of his trip, and all of a sudden now he's on a 9-ton road. We recognize that the only way that he could be legal the whole way is to reduce his load from the very beginning, and for economic reasons, I think it makes sense for trying to bring the two systems a little closer together. So the first provisions that we deal with in this bill deal with making all paved county roads, either county state aid roads or county roads, but all paved county roads, 10 tons. Hopefully this will help eliminate the some of the economic constraints that are placed on our haulers at this time. There are two exceptions to that. One is during spring load restrictions, and the other is if the county board and county engineer feel that a particular highway is not holding up to a 10-ton loading, they are allowed to post the road down at that time. The second section deals with the deletion of some language that was inserted in 2005 that tries to deal with the problem that we're trying to deal with another way now by increasing all the loads, the load rating on our county roads to a 10-ton system. This particular language gave reasonable access off of a 10-ton system onto a 9-ton system, basically, for 3-mile radius off of that 10-ton system. Since we are now changing that road that they're going to get off onto to a 10-ton road, there's really no need for this additional language. Now, in the rare exception where a county engineer may be posting that road because of concerns, even if we delete this language, there's a fallback for truckers. The federal rules require a 1-mile zone off of a 10-ton road that is still access for reasonable access to their location. I'm going to turn it over now.
Mr. Chair and members, as we were looking at the bill recently, there is, dealing with the 73-280, there is some technical language changes that need to be made to get to what the ultimate goal of the bill is, and we've committed to work with those concerned before the bill gets to Representative Leaders Committee to make that consistent with the intent.
Welcome to the committee.
Hi, my name is Jerry Geib. I'm the pavement design engineer for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I'm just going to give you a quick summary of the spring load strict study that was done for aggregate surface roads. This was a study that was sponsored by the Minnesota Department of Transportation and the Local Road Research Board. It was done by American Engineering Testing and the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And the conclusion it came from, we looked at the strength of the aggregate surface roads by doing some physical testing of the roads. That was one method. The second method was using a rut depth formula that was as part of the U.S. Forest Service systems calculations. And both by studying the strength and the rut depths, the conclusion we came to was that an aggregate surface road needs 2 weeks longer on average than a bituminous pavement to fully recover and return to the strength that it has in the summer. If you look at the last two pages on the handout, there are some photographs of a county road, and you can kind of see how the road looks through the seasons until it's fully recovered in the spring. So our conclusion then was that the 2 weeks would be an adequate period of time for most roads. Another way to summarize that the spring load restrictions for a hot mix asphalt pavement really do more to protect the subgrade. A hot mix asphalt surface is strong enough to carry the traffic during the spring loads without damage to the entire structure. On a gravel road, before the gravel road dries out, we really need to protect that surface, and that's what extending the spring load restrictions by 2 weeks would do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Guy? Okay. Yes, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Guy, I guess I never really thought of a road as recovering. I thought if you just kind of ran over it and it displaced some of the gravel underneath, that it's displaced and it's not going to fix itself. Is that not the case?
Yes, during the spring load restrictions, as our pavements right now have 4 to 6 feet of frost in them, and as the frost is going to come down from the top, water is trapped between the pavement surface and the frozen subgrade, and the structure becomes very weak. So until that structure, the water is allowed to drain out of there over about an eight-week period on our hot mix asphalt roads, those roads are very weak.
And just follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Go ahead. And so if, in fact, we did drive on those too early, and the superstructure or the top structure was collapsing, then it would require repair. It would not just kind of heal itself. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Any further questions of Mr. Guy? Okay, now, were you also going to have...
I believe Mr. Corrigan also hopes to testify to this bill.
Okay. I believe we also have Mr. Sulem. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Corrigan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, my name is Brett Corrigan. I'm Executive Director of the Aggregate Ready Mix Association, and I have one of our members, Tim Beckin, with the Simstone Products Company, with us. I just wanted to add that our association did also work on the task force that MnDOT put together to look at the road system. We recognize that this law is probably a law that comes from the 1920s, Representative. And I'm not sure how much we've kept up with this, but in 1988, MnDOT declared their entire system to be operated as a 10-ton system. And over the next 20 years, they repaired those roads, recovered those roads to where they failed. And they didn't fail in many places, and they certainly didn't fail the entire length of a road. Usually it was a mile here, 10 miles there. It was where they had gone through bad soils in some cases. The problem we've had since that time, frankly, is twofold. Once you left that trunk highway, knowing it was a 10-ton road, you and I and perhaps the owners and managers of these companies may recognize the difference between trunk highways and county roads and city streets and township roads, but truck drivers don't always know the difference between those roads. And unless they're posted, it's very difficult for them to know once they leave that trunk highway what they're driving onto. So we really do appreciate the work that the State Aid Office and the AMC and others have done in coming to some agreement to make this easier for our trucks and our drivers to know what kind of system they're driving on. The second, frankly, is just our competition nationally. Equipment today is not necessarily terribly sensitive to northern states that suffer through cold weathers, thaws and frost and spring load restrictions. They're selling a lot of their equipment in Florida and Arizona and places that don't have to worry about those things. So to find a truck today empty that can run on a 5-ton road is very difficult to do. So this attempt by MnDOT and others to revise our 10-ton system and hopefully also our 5-ton system in the future will certainly be helpful to all of the people in the state trying to move goods from one point to another.
Thank you, Mr. Corrigan. Any questions from committee members? Okay. We have one final witness for House File 1095, and that's Mr. Sulem. Welcome back.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And my primary purpose of testifying on this bill today is to clarify exactly where townships fall in this whole process, because we've been stopped by a number of you in the halls. I think I've talked to just about every lobbyist on this issue in the hallway this afternoon trying to get at one side or the other, so we just felt it important to get on the record as to where we stand. And we are in support of House File 1095, really, that we see no problems with it as long as it stays with the paved county roads and state aid. We are not opposed to a 10-ton system. I know some of you have heard that. I know that there's one county engineer that has repeatedly sent out memos stating that townships are opposed to 10 tons. That is not true. We are very supportive of developing a 10-ton system. We do oppose just the blanket, every road becomes 10-ton automatically. And I think the first bill this morning, or this afternoon you heard, is one example why. A lot of these town roads, there's no way they can handle 10 tons, and the expense of posting down would be unbearable. So we support the concept of starting it with the county system. And trying to clarify on Section 2 exactly how that works. On Section 3, the seasonal load restriction, it is true that a few years ago our association was opposed to the idea of extending it 2 weeks. However, after meeting with the engineers, and I want to make it very clear, I am not an engineer. One of the reasons I went to law school was I once had a teacher who made me promise I'd never do engineering. Please do not ask me the engineering specifics of it, but after having Mr. Jonas address our transportation committee a couple of years ago, our transportation policy committee did say that despite the concerns, as many of them being farmers and access to the route, they would be willing to accept it. They acknowledged that there may be some hardships, but because of the engineering, the committee did vote to say yes, they would accept the 2-week extension. So I hope that clarifies where the township fit in this, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sula. I do believe we do have one more. If any questions of the committee, yes.
If I might, Mr. Chair. I do understand, I think Mr. Sula is alluding to it, in Section 3 there is some significant concern in the agricultural community on the extension of the seasonal restrictions, and I think the perhaps ambivalence of the townships in some way speaks to that, but I know that the gentleman here wished to speak at least to Section 3, if not the other sections.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association and the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. And I guess with me to my left is a gentleman that also worked for a number of other farmers. They'll introduce themselves. But I think we're all going to say pretty much the same thing today, and that is that part of the testimony that you heard earlier today on this bill relative to the 10-ton provision was that it was for economic reasons. From a farm standpoint, we view economic reasons in reverse, I suppose, relative to the 2-week extension. The springtime is a very important time for all of agriculture, and to extend that time period by another 2 weeks can be very injurious from an economic standpoint. It delays construction in a number of cases, as well as it does a number of things. Now, I want to first say that I understand this is a balancing act that this committee, and I used to serve in this committee 20 years ago when I was in the legislature, and I understand the balancing act that takes place between between the funding of the roads and damage to the roads and all of those kind of things. But I think that the townships do stand to be able to determine individually what their priorities are relative to their roads and what the economic conditions in those areas are. And so we would oppose, both from the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association standpoint and the Pork Producers Association standpoint, the extension of the 2 weeks. I might point out one other thing. I'm representing the Minnesota Pork Producers here. We have a policy in this state. Many of you have been here long enough to have gone through kind of the feedlot wars, the livestock discussions that have taken place by the state legislature. And basically, that policy has driven many of the livestock operations towards the worst roads in the state. Because people want you to build the facility on the worst road in the county because nobody else lives there. And the zoning that we have in many cases sets that situation up. So that people build livestock facilities and roads that are not very good because by the very fact the roads are not good, you don't have a lot of neighbors. And so we're in kind of a conflicting situation in that situation relative to livestock facilities. They're big contributors to the state's economy. But on the one hand, you're asking us to build in the worst road. On the other hand, we're not in a position to use the road as much as we need to. And all of agriculture has changed a great deal. And I might also point out one other thing, and that is both of the groups that I work with agriculture also support increased road funding. We support increased gas tax. And so don't take our ability to do our economic conditions away from us in these 2 weeks in the spring.
Chair, for the record, Bruce Clave and I also work for a number of ag groups on this bill. It's the Minnesota Turkey Growers, Minnesota State Cattlemen, which is the beef industry, and the Association of Cooperatives. They deliver feed and pick up milk. We had our milk bill here the other day. We would just echo Jerry's testimony, but also make the pitch for the bill that's coming. Ms. Loveroe referenced the task force that worked on all this. We have an additional axle bill that's coming. Mr. Burris and I have worked on that. We're waiting for the jackets, which could solve a lot of these issues. And so we're waiting to bring that to you as well. So we'll make a pitch for that at this time. But Section 3 is what our members would be concerned with from the economic standpoint.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and our members, too, as we visited with the two-week notice, just have concerns about putting that in there. And just as Mr. Schoenfeld says, with the tight timelines, and a couple of people that I spoke to about this bill were concerned about waiting to do some early construction, and you have to balance getting ready for your planting time at that time, and so that extra 2 weeks is a concern to some of our members, and appreciate your consideration.
Although, Mr. Chairman, one more thing, although he's not here, Chris Raddatz with the Farm Bureau, he's over in the Senate covering something for all of us, and he wanted to pitch in the Farm Bureau's concerns with Section 3 as well.
Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to ask any of the gentlemen up there. It seems to me your planning is usually done before the last 2 weeks in May, and this is normally the last 2 weeks in May. Most farmers are out in April. Some of them try to get out in March. So where is, and I recognize, too, that the farmers pay for these roads, and I would think you're defeating yourself if you're going to go and beat up a road because you rely on this. And I guess I'm concerned, did you take a look at it? Are you really concerned about the last 2 weeks in May? That's not normally your big spring work time, is it?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair and Representative Leader, it depends on where you live. And where I live in Pine County, that's a high time planting season for a lot of our, and that's the people I talk to on this bill. So it depends on the cropping systems and the times in the state, but in our area, we've been fighting this on issues on corn and crop insurance, but that's a very busy time.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, as I said, I represent the livestock industry in this issue. And that is not time sensitive to when you're planting corn. That's a situation where when hogs are ready to go down the road, you need to be able to take them down the road. You can't wait another 2 weeks in order to justify that, or, you know, to hold them off that long. Same is true of feed. Most of our feed these days is delivered by 18-wheelers. It's no longer the single-axle trucks that we saw many years ago. And so from a livestock standpoint, every week that you're not able to move your commodities both in and out is a problematic situation. And it probably is more to the feed side than it is to the livestock taking out the road.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last thing I'm here, I'm not speaking against ag because that's my bread and butter up there too. But I'm a little concerned. We still have to build roads. Somebody has to pay for them, and they go to heck. And who pays for them? You're part of the paying. I know that, and I would think you'd be very concerned. And generally, I know with the weight restrictions, there's been a real change in the attitude of people that drive the roads. But I'm a little concerned that the township officials and the county officials really got a big concern because the roads go to heck. You know, they don't have money to fix them, and they catch the heck too. So. Where is this happy medium?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can only respond in two ways. First of all, I did state that both of our associations are in support of more road funding. So we'd like to see more road funding, and we'll try to help you get there. But in addition to that, you hear a lot about local decision-making around here. And in this particular case, we'd rather have that decision made by the town board that makes that decision locally rather than just a statewide blanket kind of a situation. And that local town board can take into consideration their costs and also the economic benefit that they have in the community because of when they decide to post that road. So we just think it's a better place to have it made.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, you would be amenable to change the word from shall to may?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, I think if you change it to may, you're only talking about what the commissioner may do, not what the local unit would do. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, I assume in this case they mean Commissioner of Transportation rather than County Commissioner.
That's what I'm speaking
I'm
to.
I'm just suggesting, I'm not saying that it's up to the author of the bill. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, what I was speaking to was the fact that the Commissioner of Transportation, not a local decision.
Representative Morrow, do you have a comment on this?
Mr. Chair, I do. The agricultural groups in my area have raised significant concerns, as once you've just heard, and have talked to me at great length about local control and understanding of local conditions, and to my mind have caused me to relook at this section as well. I don't know if the word may resolves the issue. What I'm hearing is that perhaps it's not, because again, it would be a statewide decision as opposed to a local decision.
Okay, and Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, I think that if I may suggest, I think the author could work with the other group and take a look at that section, and you can address it. It would appear to me that you could address it.
I appreciate that. I'll do that.
Well, you wouldn't have to take out anything. You accommodate the word commissioner and the word may and shall, I would presume. And that may satisfy all the groups. I don't know. And certainly, I don't want to come out here looking like a man of agriculture, but I'm really concerned about, we've got to fund some highways, and we're having a real struggle, as you well know. Regardless of what amount of money we're putting in, we're not coming up to a certain level that we need.
Representative Ruth.
Mr. Chair, it's Representative Leader addressed what I was going to address.
Okay. Any other questions from committee members? I guess I'd like to echo Representative Leader's concerns. It would be great, as this bill presumably moves ahead, that I also share some concerns about Section 3, and it would be good for the stakeholders to at least maybe get together and see if this could be worked out, because, again, as an urban guy, I'm sympathetic to some of the issues that you brought up about control, and it would be great if it make a stab at working this out. It would be really great. Representative Severson, do you... You look very intent here. Do you have a question? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a fascinating argument.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. We're always talking about the split of outstate metro, the outstate funding, metro funding, how much county roads are getting, and I know the counties are always in a pinch for getting the bucks, and they're always pushing the projects further back. And it is truly a juggling act, because I think a full 25% of our state incomes comes from agriculture. It's a huge industry. It's something that we need to support. But, we're kind of in a bind here. And I'm wondering why hogs choose to mature the last 2 weeks in May.
Any comments from our agricultural panel?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I... that's a lighthearted question, but in fact, they choose to mature every week of the year. And the fact is they gain a couple of pounds every day, so there comes a point at which you cannot keep them on the farm, or they're going to be overweight and you're going to lose more money.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was when I was nagging at me.
Got a sense, sir. It seems to be a little unsettled over there, so thank you for speaking up. Any further... testimony from anyone in the audience or from the public who would like to weigh in on House File 1095? With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 1095 be recommended to be moved up to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee for possible inclusion in the Transportation Policy Omnibus Bill. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion carries. And we have your last bill. And,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have about 20 minutes now.
We'll make it very quick.
Complete your bill and Representative Nelson's bill. I think we can do it.
Absolutely.
Let's try to move quickly.
This is on House File 1162, and the return of Mr. Corrigan will talk to this bill. It's a change of vehicle length from 40 feet to 45 feet. Mr. Gorin will explain the need for this change.
This is the Fred Corrigan show today.
It is.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, for the record, my name is Fred Corrigan. I'm an executive director of the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association. I also have Greg Anderson with me, who's the sales rep with Green Motors in St. Paul, who
provides a lot of this equipment to our members. Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a fairly simple piece of legislation that was also discussed at the MnDOT Task Force on Road Weights and Truck Weights. I want to make very clear, though, that this bill does not in any way allow for any increased weight of the vehicle. Rather, it looks to create some consistency with current statutes, which allow 45-foot trucks or 45-foot vehicles as motorhomes are allowed to be 45 feet and school buses as well, or buses are allowed to be 45 feet. There's also an exemption in statute which we would draw your attention to that allows for 48-foot mobile cranes. The main reason for this effort on our part over the last couple of years really ties itself to air emission controls that are required by the federal government now of any new equipment that's on the road. These air emission control units are the size of a small air conditioner, and they need to be placed somewhere on the truck. The ready-mix trucks specifically are getting to the point where we just don't have any more real estate on a 40-foot frame to carry that kind of equipment. Again, we're not looking to add any weight. What we're really looking for is to add some length so that we have more room to carry the equipment that is on a ready-mix truck. I think a lot of our members have said that they probably won't be using all 45 feet, that they might go to a 42 or 43 foot, but it made sense as we drafted this bill to be consistent with vehicles that are already allowed to travel on the roads at 45 feet. Mr. Chair, I'll leave it at that. If there's any questions, Mr. Anderson may be able to help me.
Okay.
Yes,
thank
Mr.
you.
Chair, Mr. Chair, again, I'd appreciate knowing the State Patrol's point of view.
Okay, I think they're here. Would you want your additional testifier?
Mr. Chair, no, I think you can just let there's some technical questions.
Okay. They indicate no problem.
Okay. Do we have an additional witness that would like to testify on the...
No, unless there was questions.
He's just here, Mr. Chair, to answer questions if questions arose.
Yes, my question, Mr. Cordy, and I, Representative Earhart had an interim hearing, I believe it was in 06 sometime, and this issue, I think, was one of the... Was this issue addressed at that hearing? Was this brought up? Because I know the AAA may have had some concerns.
Mr. Chair, I believe...
Remembering that correctly?
Yes, it probably came up as part of the report on the MnDOT road weight and truck weight study. This was a piece of the recommendations from that study. Again, it doesn't deal with truck weights, but it fit that it was an issue that should be dealt with as part of that report.
Okay. And just to be clear and to review, it's the air pollution control equipment requirement that is really prompting this?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's kind of pushed us over the top in terms of finding enough room on a 40-foot frame to actually get all of this equipment on the truck.
Okay, that's helpful. Any other questions from the committee? Representative House?
No, I would just say that there was one problem. We have expanded it generally, and I always think for the driver on the road, overall, the drivers on the road are always quite intimidated by this, and we don't often think about them, but I don't know about this incremental creep and at what point just the perception for automobiles is difficult.
Certainly, and I would be interested, I mean, it would be helpful to know as this bill progresses, again, if they're the same kinds of concerns that the AAA, for example, had raised at Representative Earhart's hearing are still those concerns. Representative Leader.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment for Mr. Corrigan. I thought when he left here he was in the aggregate business. He's building tents, and they're getting bigger all the time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I just want to assure you that the drivers of these trucks are all CDL-trained drivers. Safety is absolutely our highest priority, and I hope that you understand that we're hoping that we're not changing any of our safety records by extending these trucks.
Okay, well, thank you very much. There's no further comments or questions from the committee. Is there any further testimony from the public? I will renew my motion that House File 1162 move on to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee for possible inclusion in a transportation policy omnibus bill. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. We have one final bill, and our own committee member, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Larry Olilia?
Olala,
okay. From Driver Services here to help me with this. I was asked to carry this bill from the agency.
President, would you just like to move your bill first?
Yes. I'll move my bill to
House 1551 will move to the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee for possible inclusion in a transportation policy omnibus bill.
Correct. Thank you. Anyway, House 1551 is a technical bill, a very technical bill. And basically what it does is changing some road or some weights on large trucks to comply with federal weights across the country so that when the driver is driving across state lines, they're not having to change the trucks back and forth. And it's basically what the technicality of the bill is, and I will let Larry.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Hi, my name is Larry Ola. I'm the Vehicle Services Program Director for Driver and Vehicle Services. This bill basically has three parts to it. What it's meant to do is to address administrative issues within the fee structure or fee schedule with the registration of the bill. The first part of it deals with changing a weight class from currently 9,000 pounds to 10,000 pounds. Currently, if you have a commercial vehicle and the gross weight of the vehicle is 10,000 pounds or more, you are required to provide proof of a U.S. DOT number before you can register that vehicle or renew the registration on that vehicle. The way that the fee structure is scheduled currently, there is a group of vehicles that are between 9,000 and 10,000 pounds that are still in that registration class, even though they do not meet the requirement for the DOT number. This would just make the clean break at 10,000 pounds so that we would know if the vehicle is 10,000 pounds or more, if it's operated commercially, it would be subject to the DOT requirement. The second provision of the bill deals with a break at 55. Currently, the break shows 51,000 to 57,000 pounds. Federally required is a proof of heavy vehicle use tax called HVUT at 55,000 pounds or more. What we would do is we would keep the old designation between 51,000 and 57,000. However, we would have a break and the sticker itself would show a weight of less than 55,000 pounds for those vehicles that were not intended to be operated in excess of 55,000 pounds, thus exempting those registrants from having to provide us proof of a heavy vehicle use tax when they renew registration. Currently, if somebody comes in and registers in this weight class, we are asking for heavy vehicle use tax unless they make a separate declaration. This just helps to clarify that break or designation between those two different weight classes. And then the third provision, currently right now, the weight classification for our T stickers at 81,000 pounds. However, both in Minnesota and nationally, without additional overweight permits, the highest amount of weight that you're allowed to operate on roads is 80,000 pounds. And so this is just a clarification and change to show that. And for that, I stand for questions.
Any questions of the witness? Any questions of the author? Okay, well, I think you just dazzled us.
I think people just want to go home.
We'll move this on to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. I don't think that there would be any tax, whether the tax committee gets into the vehicle registration taxes at all. My sense is they don't, but
we can
hopefully check. You don't have to go to the tax committee. But just a heads up. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion.
Okay. All in favor of the motion to move this bill to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee for possible inclusion in the Transportation Policy Omnibus Bill, signify by saying aye.
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 And the motion carries. And we still need to approve the minutes. We didn't have a quorum at the beginning of the day. So would Representative Earhart like to move the minutes today?
Mr. Chairman, I move the approval of minutes for February 28th.
Representative Earhart moves approval of the minutes from February 28th. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion carries. A couple of announcements before we adjourn. And that is we have two more meetings scheduled before bill deadline. And we are getting a number of bill referrals. They're starting to pile up. So we'll certainly schedule our next meeting still on for 2:15 next Wednesday. But you may want to reserve perhaps that evening if we need to go into the evening. And then we'll be meeting again on the 21st with the same type of situation. And then we'll be working on the policy omnibus bill after that. So we may be able to do that in the full committee, perhaps on we still haven't finalized the schedule, but perhaps on the 22nd. So that's just a tentative thing. Although we do have some finance issues that week as well. So just to get a sense of the roadmap here, and we do have our last in the series of field hearings and town meetings tonight in Woodbury at 7 o'clock. This isn't an official committee meeting. It's more of a town meeting, but if you can make it, that would be great for our friends in the East Metro. And there will be some carpooling opportunities, I believe, available. And Ms. Mahon can give you some more information on that. Probably need to leave here around 6 o'clock, 6:15, to make sure that we get there on time, given the traffic. Heading out on eastbound on I-94. So, with that, we stand adjourned.